Srila Prabhupada ki,
Shri
Bhakti Vedanta ki,
Grantaraj,
Srima Bhagavatam ki,
Giriraj
Maharaj ki, Jainitai Goprimam ki. So tomorrow, Bhakti Rasamrita Swami will be giving their class for the Bhakti Vedanta course. Did they put a poster up? Did you? Is there any poster up or anything? What's that? Did it say anything about the time or?
7 to 8:30.
7 to 8:30. It's written. Okay. Okay, so the class tomorrow, Maharaj will speak, but he will begin at 7 o'clock. And he'll finish at 8:30. As far as I know, it'll be, if it's not here, it'll be in the temple, but I think it'll be in here. I don't know how many people will come. So if it's a lot of... Oh, no, it has to be here because the Aarti's on. So, yeah, it'll be in here. 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
Just a suggestion, probably if it is a big congregation, can you have it in the Prasadam also?
If it's that many people, I don't know if it'll be that many. It'll probably just be enough. You know, maybe we'll have to move the tables and just have chairs or something like that. We'll see how many come. Yeah, he's going to, he will do an overview of the second canto. So it's being like an overview of the topics of the second canto. Seven. Okay, so what have we discussed in our previous classes?
And he was a great demon. He was trying to destroy all the places where the daily rituals and temple worship and whatever. And he wanted to finish all the riot activities. And at the same time, he was a great politician. So he was trying to convince the mother and sister and all and everybody that this was a state. This was decided by the
any other points? Why should we not take his example? Any other points?
Is the demonic attitude to destroy the natural resources of the
anything else? Okay. So the first chapter begins coming or connected to the sixth canto. In the sixth canto, Diti was performing the Kumsavana Vrata, and in the beginning of the seventh canto, Maharaj Prichit, he asked Sukadeva Goswami, why is it that the Lord will sometimes favor the demigods and appear to be the enemy of the demons when he is actually equal to everyone? So it is described that he is equal to everyone, but still, even though he's equal to everyone, he has the tendency to favor the devotees, which is natural. His devotees are pious and they're devoted to Krishna, whereas the non-devotees, the demons, are atheistic and they cause harm to others. So naturally he acts like that. So then it is described that even though the Lord appears to be inimical towards the non-devotees, the demons, but still he gives them great benefit. Anyone who is killed by the Lord receives Sayuja Mukti, receives liberation from the material energy. So he is greatly beneficial. He is greatly benefic to them. He gives them so much mercy. And even some of them go directly to Vaikuntha, such as Putana. Even though she was acting inimically towards Krishna, still he gave her liberation. She went directly to Vaikuntha. So that is his great quality. So then Maharaj Yudhishthira, he asks, how is it that the devotees, or the brahmanas, the four kumaras, how could they curse Jai and Vijay? And how is it that the Lord's associates could fall into the material world? So why is it that the Lord's associates came into this material world? Why would Brahmanas, pure Brahmanas, curse the Lord's associates? So he asked these questions. Couldn't find me. So he asked these questions. Why would the Lord act like this to send his devotees to the material world? So Prabhupada generally describes that we did misuse our independence, and because we've misused our independence, we've fallen from the material, the spiritual world, to the material world. And this arrangement where the Kumaris were cursing Jai and Vijay was an arrangement of the Lord himself to facilitate his desire to fight. So then the description is given at the end of the first chapter about the different lives of Jai and Vijay in their three incarnations. And then it describes Maharaj Yudhishthira asks at the end of the first chapter, he says, why is it that Hiranyakashipu was so inimical towards Prahlad Maharaj? What was the reason for him to be so inimical towards Sri Prahlad? What was his reasoning for this? So then we hear in the second chapter about the pastime of Hiranyakashipu. So the second chapter is describing the nature of the demon, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the seventh canto is describing two types of uti, or inclination. One is demoniac, one is divine. What a devotee is like, this will be described in the first 10 chapters of the seventh canto. What a devotee is like, a devotee is pure. So Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotional service, will be seeing the character of Sri Prahlad, Prahlad Maharaj. And then we'll hear about the opposite, which is the demoniac inclination of his father. So this is being seen in the second chapter, the demoniac inclination of Hiranyakashipu, how he is a demon. And what is the nature of a demon? A demon will not take good advice from others. A demon has no respect for God's energy. He misuses the material energy. He thinks it is simply for his pleasure. And we see at this point in time that the demoniac people on the earth, they think it is simply for their pleasure, and they're destroying the earth as we speak. Even I listened to the radio the last few days, I mean, it's just the same old thing. They're just making it worse and worse and worse as the days go by. They have no idea. Even on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, I was at my brother's place, and they had an interview with Tony Abbott, who will probably be the next Prime Minister. And the man has absolutely no idea how to do good for others. Even though he is a somewhat pious man, but because of ignorance, they just make the wrong decisions. He was actually against abortion, but now because of so much political pressure, then he's allowing abortion to take place. He said, I won't stop it. Even though personally he believes that it's the wrong thing. But because of political pressure, he says, no, I won't stop it, because it's just too much politics, too much pressure on men like that. So this is the nature of the demons, and it's a demoniac society, unfortunately. So we're hearing about the demoniac quality in this chapter, about Hiranyakashipu. However, now he's beginning to preach. He's giving transcendental knowledge to his nephews and his sister-in-law. So he's preaching. So as Mataji said, that we should listen to his preaching, because he preaches very nicely, but we should not follow his example. Even sometimes demoniac people will say good things, but actually they don't follow it. They say good things, but they don't follow it. So as Chanakya says, you should take gold even from a filthy place. Hiranyakashipu is speaking wisely, so we should listen to him, even though he himself does not follow the teachings. Any points?
So, I have seen Nirmala dealing with one of the devotees, and in regard to abortion, both the couple are devotees. They are initiated disciples of Maharaj. I don't know, because it's private person, I do not want to think of their names. But the behavior of the husband has been such that the wife had to abort the child. It's not that he has done anything physically any harm, but his behavior in the family was so difficult for the Mataji that she was stressed mentally, and that stress resulted in abortion. So therefore, it's not just some political people or there sitting and ignorant and the guru, but here we have initiated. The fact that the person is initiated implies that he has got better knowledge and understanding, and yet his behavior is so demonic in one sense that the wife had to apologize to the stress.
Yeah, this is Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means all sorts of things happen which would not normally happen in previous ages. These things would not happen. But in this day and age, the contamination of the age is that it takes place. Sometimes.
Lord Krishna says also in Harikatha Bhagavad Gita, Kamin Dhyani Semya Asti Mansasana Pindyartha Pramuratma Mithyatar Sochiti. So people externally say, show off that they are devotees, but they may not be. They might be thinking of the sense gratification all the time, but for a show, they want to be.
Yeah, that happens also. Okay. So tonight we'll go from verses 32 to 40.
About abortion, if somebody does that, through the chanting, you can get blessing.
Eventually. It's not a simple matter. It's a complicated thing, so it requires some discussion and explanation, but we don't have time now to go on that. Okay. Can you hear us, Sydney?
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu.
Okay. Happy Labor Day.
Thank you, Prabhu. We share the same.
Okay. I hope you haven't been working too hard.
No, Prabhu.
You never work too hard. Your husband does, though. Okay. So we'll go from verses 32 to 40. As the queens loudly cried, their tears glided down their breasts, becoming reddened by kumkum, powder, and fell upon the lotus feet of their husband. Their hair became disarrayed, their ornaments fell, and in a way they evoked sympathy from the hearts of others. The queens began lamenting their husband's death. O Lord, you have now been removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight. You had previously sustained the livelihood of the inhabitants of Ushinara, and thus they were happy. But your condition now is the cause of their unhappiness. O King, O hero, you were a very grateful husband and the most sincere friend of all of us. How should we exist without you? O hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Get the Bhagavatam. Sharada Rasa, you like to read that?
Formerly, a Kshatriya king was generally the husband of many wives, and after the death of the king, especially in the Valley King, all the queens would agree to accept Saha Varan, dying with the husband who was their wife. When Pandu Maharaj, the father of Pandu, died, his two wives, namely the mother of Yudhishthira, Bhima and Arjuna, and the mother of Nakula and Sahadeva, were both ready to die in the fire with their husband. Later, after a compromise was arranged, Kunti's state arrived to care for the little children, and otherwise Madhuri was allowed to die with her husband. This system of Sahamara continued in India even until the time of British rule, but later it was discouraged. Since the attitude of wives gradually changed with the advancement of culture, thus the system of Sahamara has practically been abolished. Nevertheless, within the past 50 years, I have seen the wife of a medical practitioner voluntarily accept death immediately when her husband died. Both the husband and wife were taken in a procession in the mourning car. Such intense love of a church wife for her husband is a special case.
Any points here?
But I think if the wife wants to die, then she should be able to. But if she doesn't want to die, well, she should touch her. Then, no, you should not force her.
Any other point?
This is highly a debatable point. We have in the history, yeah. See, when his wife, she heard that when his wife heard that her husband has died in the jungle, it was killed by the king's wife, she leaves the body. So therefore, the emotion should be such that just by hearing somebody's harshness gets lifted up so much that they're willing to leave the body, or they just leave the body. But otherwise,
the view may be different because in the best with the wife, if she is left alone, she should be shanty. And that will help the husband also, the parted husband also. Because husband has left the body, he cannot do any good chanting with this body. If the wife stays and that chanting, that will be much more useful. Admit it will do. Should she leave or what is your opinion?
We will discuss that.
There's a few that the people are simply very powerful. It is not an ordinary thing. Prabhupada mentions that Kaliyuga's concept of a karma is not valued. But it's a concept of a very powerful as well. The test by the Prabhupada audience and the test by the staff, she seems to be a very powerful person. And the very fact that she is separated from the husband, that the pain is more than putting herself in the power of the husband. So she can withstand the pain, she resolves to follow her husband, and that's why she, he goes. He goes to white interest, he goes to white interest.
Any other points? So, if you read the Mahabharata, you'll see there are many examples of extraordinary feats and activities by the great devotees and the great souls. So these things cannot be imitated. We should try to understand the principle, and we should see the example, and we should try to follow it to the best of our ability, but we should understand that we'll never come to this platform in our current position. Very rare. Maybe some devotees will, but it's very rare that a woman would actually do this in this day and age. That's why Prabhupada is saying it's generally not expected that the women will do this in this day and age, because it's a very high level of chastity and devotion to the husband like that. It practically means the husband has become everything for the wife. You know, he is guru pati. He is the guru for the wife. That's how she sees it. So therefore, to enter the fire is less painful than being separated from him. But generally that is not seen these days. We will not see those actual examples. We will not see the wives will be on such an exalted level like that. Or the husbands will perform, you know, equal acts. It's not generally seen in Kali Yuga. In the previous Yuga, in Dwapara Yuga, 5,000 years ago, in Mahabharata, you saw these things took place. You saw that when Dhritarashtra died in Gandhari, she entered onto the fire. That was the potency at that time. So we should follow their example. We should try to at least act like them in terms of their example and their day-to-day activities. But we should understand that we can't be like them because they're more exalted than us. It's different now. You'll see that Gandhari is one of the great chaste women in history, that as soon as she heard that the husband was blind, she immediately blindfolded herself, which is extraordinary. Practically no one in this day and age could do that. You know, I couldn't do anything, you know, similar to that, to meet an act like that, to do something so selfless and to be so surrendered to the husband. It's just such an exalted level of consciousness. But these things are given within the Mahabharata, within the Bhagavatam. These examples are given. Why? Because it shows us the principle, or the importance of the principle. And we should endeavor to understand that we should try to act like that. It means that marriage is a sacred act. It means that once you get married, then you have to be dedicated to that vow. And this is something in Kali Yuga which is not so common. In Kali Yuga, we see that everything becomes watered down. It becomes acceptable to lessen the standards more and more and more. So the basic principle that we're learning from the Bhagavatam, from the Mahabharata, is to develop an ideal character or ideal qualities. You see, just like Karna, as another example, that even when he was told by Krishna himself that actually the Pandavas are your brothers, and if you come across to the Pandava side, they will install you as the emperor. Yudhishthira will hold the umbrella above your head. He has no envy. You know, he has no desire to be the emperor if he understands his older brother is present. So this is the caliber. But still, even though Karna understood the situation, he would not give up on his vow to Duryodhana. Because he said to Duryodhana, I will protect you. I'll protect your kingdom. You've given me a kingdom, so I will protect your kingdom. And he took that vow. And he said, I will always be loyal to you. So even though he knew the situation, but still he would not go against his word. So these are the kind of things that we should learn. We should not go against our word. In Kali Yuga, that's why in Kali Yuga it is actually said that you have to be very careful about taking vows. Because in Kali Yuga it's very hard to keep vows. We give up our vows quite easily in Kali Yuga. But in previous Yugas, people, when they said something, they would do that thing. They would continue even to the death. So Karna said to Krishna, he said that at the end of the battle, there will still be five brothers. Either I will die or Arjuna will die.
I think you said to
Kunti. Okay. After, yeah, maybe you said to Krishna and then maybe you said to Kunti after.
Okay.
Afterwards. Okay. So he said to both of them, he said that at the end of one would be one person dead. Either I will die or Arjuna will die. There will be a duel between myself and Arjuna. And he spared, because he could have killed the other four. There were opportunities during the battle where he actually defeated the other four brothers. But when he had Bhima at his feet, Bhima was on the ground, and he could have taken his life at that time. He just took his bow and he tapped him on the chest. And he said, I'll spare you. Like that. Which is a great insult. Not to kill the Jatra. The Chatur wants to, if he's been defeated, he'd actually like to, he'd prefer to die at that time instead of being humiliated. So he humiliated him. But then later on, Bhima got him also. He defeated Karna, and Karna was on the ground, and then Bhima took his bow and he put it on his chest.
And he said, I could kill you, but I'll leave you for Arjuna. They're teaching us an example. So the Mahabharata, the Bhagavatam, they're full of these examples of how we should aspire to act. But we should understand we'll never come to these standards. We'll never be as great as these personalities. But we should at least try to emulate them and try to follow their example as much as we can.
If we are talking about party when there are no children, small children or big children, and what about the case, let's say, when better we don't meet the person who smokes food, as Chandrasekhar was mentioning, the wife is not good because to go with the husband, isn't it?
Yeah, it means that. Like in the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur says, we can reject the guru when the guru stops following. So if the guru is no longer following the principles of Vaishnava culture, then we can reject the guru. But if he's following, we can't reject him. So same with the husband. If the husband is not following, then we can reject the husband. And if the wife is not following, we can reject the wife. And if your daughter is not following, then you can reject the daughter. Oh, sorry, I didn't know you were here. So.
Okay.
Any other points?
Yeah, one point, Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said that the lady voluntarily accepted immediately her husband died. I was just wondering what is euthanasia.
Was it what?
Euthanasia.
Euthanasia?
Yes.
What was that?
Because if you leave the past behind, they say that, see, there was a doctor, medical practitioner, she voluntarily accepted death.
Mm.
And she went, dead body was taken together as a procession. It means she didn't enter the fire, she died before.
Mm.
So what if that she had one bit of an injection or something?
Well, she must have done it herself.
So. Yeah.
She took her own life somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, it says like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe in the procession she was alive and she was going with her husband, but it doesn't say that she was dead.
Okay. You two work it out. You two work it out after class.
What if the wife dies and what about the husband? Should he not be so much attached to the wife that he too should leave the body?
No, that's not part of the Vedic culture. What's
that like? Husband could not get married in India.
It's because the husband is meant to be detached. That's the point. It's meant to be that the husband is attached to the guru and the wife is attached to the husband.
So therefore the husband should leave the body when the guru leaves the body. If we follow the logic.
Yeah, it means that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a personal servant whose name was Krishna Das. And then after Bhaktivinoda Thakur left the body within 2 months, then Krishna Das left his body feeling separation from the guru. So if you're feeling so much separation from your guru when he leaves, then you will leave your body. If you're actually feeling that separation.
Well, as soon as Shiva Amandi Mahaprabhu left this world, I mean, then also many associates, they just left their body one after the other.
Yeah, many felt like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Raghunath Das Goswami was going to give up his life after Lord Chaitanya left and Nityananda left. And he's going to give up his life. But we should stay in this world, actually, because the example was given, the difference between Nanda Maharaj and Maharaj Dasharatha. So when Lord Ramachandra was banished to the forest, then Maharaj Dasharatha gave up his life in separation from Ram. So sometimes it is said that Maharaj Dasharatha is even has more devotion than Nanda Maharaj. Because Nanda Maharaj, when Krishna left, he did not give up his body. He maintained his life. But actually, the Acharyas describe that Maharaj Nanda has even stronger devotion, because he was thinking that maybe one day Krishna will come back. He promised he will come back, so that means one day he will come back. And I have to stay here, even though I feel like giving up my body. I have to stay here and I have to maintain Mother Yashoda and all the bridge buses. So it is higher to serve the Guru's order than to give up one's life. Just like Krishna sent Uddhava to the Himalaya, to Badrikashram after he left, and he said, you go and tell the sages there, give them my instructions, and even though you, Uddhava, he said to Krishna, I want to leave because you're leaving. I actually want to leave before you. But Krishna said, no, it is higher that you serve my desire. You should stay in this world and you should do service. So that is the principle. For us, we don't have that much attachment anyway. Our guru leaves, we don't have so much separation that we give up our body. We're not that advanced. Any other points?
What would be Jivan? Because if the wife is following the husband, Jivan.
What's the question?
I mean, here, I'm thinking about the children, but in the case of Pandava, because there are two wives, one left with the husband, so the other wife would take care of the children.
Yeah, so what's the question?
The question is that this Sahamaranam doesn't mention about the children in respect, because they are responsible for bringing the children into this world. It doesn't show that children should be brought up by child for the mother or someone. I didn't mention about it.
Yeah, usually in a natural society, then the husband and wife leave at an elderly age. Right. That's normal. It's considered impious if the children leave before the parents leave. That's considered to be impious. That did not happen previously. In the earlier ages, that did not happen. Then it happened in Krishna's pastimes, where the brahmana, his children were disappearing like that. So then that was considered very improper. So the brahmana came and criticized Krishna. He said, what is going on here in your kingdom? This is not proper. So generally it is like that. It means that it's bad karma when that happens, when the child leaves before. But in Kali Yuga the reactions are heavy. So there are all sorts of things happening in Kali Yuga. Unless she leaves the children with other people. Just like Madhuri, she entered the fire.
Yes, but they had the mother and Kunti. The exception is if the children
are. So it depends on the circumstance. They'll leave them with relatives if they're feeling like that. Or they may stay in the world and they'll look after the children. None of us are going to do it anyway, so. We should just be good husbands and good wives and good children. That should be what we should learn out of this. Because we'll never be on this level to perform any of these activities. Any other points?
Okay. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for setting in the west.
According to the Vedic system, if a person dies during the daytime, it is customary for his funeral ceremony to be performed before the sun sets, regardless of whether he is burned or buried. And if he dies at night, the funeral must be completed before the next sunrise. Apparently, the queens continued lamenting for the dead body, the lump of matter, and would not allow it to be taken away for burning. This illustrates the strong grip of the illusion amongst foolish persons who consider the body the self. Women are generally considered less intelligent. Because of ignorance only, the queens thought of the dead body as their husband, and somehow or other thought that if the body were kept, their husband would remain with them. Such a conception of the self is certainly for gopara, cows, and asses. We have actually seen that sometimes when a cow's calf has died, the milkman cheats the cow by presenting before her the dead body of a calf. Thus, the cow, who would not otherwise allow milking, licks the dead body of the calf and allows herself to be milked. This substantiates the description of the Shastra that a foolish man in the bodily conception of life is like a cow. Not only do foolish men and women consider the body the self, but we have even seen that the dead body of the so-called yogi was kept for days by his disciples, who thought that their guru was in samadhi. When decomposition began and the bad smell unfortunately began to overwhelm the yogic power, the disciples allowed the dead body of the so-called yogi to be burned. First, the bodily concept of life is extremely strong among foolish persons who are compared to cows and asses. Nowadays, great scientists are trying to freeze dead bodies so that in the future, these frozen bodies may again be brought to life. The incident narrated by Hiranyakashipu from history must have taken place millions of years ago, but Hiranyakashipu lived millions of years ago and was even then quoting from history. Thus, the incident occurred before Hiranyakashipu's lifetime, but the same ignorance in the bodily concept of life is still prevalent, not only among laymen, but even among scientists who think they will be able to revive frozen corpses. Apparently, the queens did not want to deliver the dead body for burning because they were afraid of dying with the dead body of their husband.
What are the points in this paragraph?
In the beginning of the paragraph, it was written, that's what I wanted to say, the message. She died immediately because, according to Vedic system, the funeral should be performed. It is before sunset during the day. It should be performed before sunset, and it is during the night before. So, for some people, that will be immediately. It depends what they consider immediately after a second or immediately that day.
Okay. You still have to work it out after the class. Any other points?
Embalming is a process these days people do it. The dead body is injected with various chemicals to keep the body in its place. Apart from, of course, that is not from the perspective that sometime later on the body gets revived, but from the perspective of awe and reverence, like having Stalin's body was kept in glass, they perform surgery and then do so many things so that the body remains fresh and they get with chemicals time to time. Over the last 100 years, it's there and it has become part of their museum. And that trend has been continued worldwide, including recently when the eventual Prime Minister or somebody he died, his body was combined with chemicals. And with a special branch of medicine, they do this on a regular basis.
Well, yeah, I think even the Egyptian
mummies
used another impression that someday the dead body come to life.
cry loudly, woman, even in scripture, she said, if you cry, then the person he can see he's in pain. Even the people are supposed to love him. Oh, he's our dear father, he was your husband. They don't care about that, if he suffer or not suffer, God of scripture. They should cry.
Any other point?
Yeah, I don't understand this one. I thought if somebody died at night time, since the day baby, and they have the funeral after the funeral.
They just do it at night time. That's all.
Yeah.
Any other points?
Well, I think even in Vaishnavas, there is a over the limit, there is a prominent Vaishnava Acharya in South India. His body is Ramanujacharya, his body is still there, and the hairs on the chest is lower, and I think the knees is also great.
But there is not embalming.
Yes.
In Sri Rangam temple, it's there in South India, where Sri Ramanujacharya, he was placed in Samadhi and under the ground. On the third day, he himself comes up. It's not that somebody has brought him up. He comes as it is, and that body is there as a deity form in the temple. One can see today also. But no one has brought him up. So they, right now, when he's now in the form of deity, they apply essential oils and then other
So we're seeing here that this is basic Bhagavad Gita philosophy. That we are not the body, we are the soul. But none of us understand this point. Even though it's the first thing that Krishna teaches, Asochanan Vasochastvam, is the beginning of spiritual life, but none of us understand this point. Everyone thinks we are the body. We identify with our body. Because you can see how much time you spend brushing your hair every day. So if you think you're not the body, then you wouldn't spend so much time on your body. So, still for us, the Bhagavatam is still very theoretical. Because sambandhijnana means to understand the difference between matter and spirit. And still, it is still a theoretical understanding to us. We don't have vijnana. Or shastra chakshus, or realization at this point in time. We just have very basic understanding of that. One who is an advanced devotee, a Krishna, then he will understand he is not the body, but he is the soul. And he will not relate to the happiness and distress of the body. But you see that people these days, especially in Kali Yuga, not so much devotees, but non-devotees, they become so attached to the body. And they cannot let go of the body of the person. So this is due to avijja. We're more elevated than that. By the mercy of Prabhupada and Krishna, we are more elevated than that. We don't have so much attachment like that, but still, we're not released from the bodily concept of life. So it is a very advanced level of consciousness. But it's the first thing that Krishna teaches us in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, we should study the Bhagavad Gita regularly. We should hear the Gita regularly. Just like I was in my car, I had to get some work done on it last week, so I was driving Krishna Katha Prabhu's car. So they had the Gitamrita playing on the CD in the car. So every time I turned the car on, it straight out the Gitamrita would come. Which means Purnachandra Goswami, then he's reading the Bhagavad Gita. And he's also including some of the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vijayabhushan. So I actually haven't read or listened to the Bhagavad Gita for a long, long time, for years, maybe 7 years or something. Probably since we taught it in the... But I was just noticing how much effect and how beneficial it is to our consciousness to regularly hear the Bhagavad Gita. Because we are still students of the Bhagavad Gita. We've not understood the Bhagavad Gita yet. So we have to hear the Bhagavad Gita regularly. You can't just jump to higher things because you're not ready to just listen to higher things yet. We still need to study the Bhagavad Gita until we understand the Bhagavad Gita. which will, we may not even understand the Bhagavad Gita in this lifetime. It is such an exalted topic like that. But here, the Bhagavatam is speaking basic Bhagavad Gita knowledge, basic Sambandha Gyan. We are not the body, we are the soul. So, Hiranyakashipu is preaching like this to try to give liberation to his relatives, to try to bring them above the bodily concept of life. So he's giving this basic knowledge for their benefit. So.
I went to the hospital and my first patient was really interesting one. From cancer, and this patient, she had so much metastasis that they decided they're not going even to do any surgery. Basically, they will leave her to die. But she was very peaceful. She had a problem because she was grieving because of her friends had left the body, so she didn't say goodbye. And I talked to her and I said, you look like you're not afraid of dying yourself. And she said that when she was 20 years old, she delivered the second child, and then she had a hemorrhage, and then she had a near-death experience. She went out of the body. She saw the other side, how beautiful it was, the different colors. She saw her grandmother, this and that. And actually, she said that because she realized of her eternity, she's not afraid to die anymore. She was looking forward, and she actually didn't want to come back. Her grandmother told her, you have to come back for your children. She said, I don't want to. And then she said, I heard the voice, and that was the voice of God, and he told me, you have to go back. They need you. And now she was very peaceful. I could see that she did not have a fear. And just the realization of that eternal part, also she didn't realize herself as a real spiritual being, but she realized the eternity of the soul. She could peacefully accept the death.
What were you doing in the hospital?
I'm going on the course of pastoral care, and you're going to talk to the patient.
Yeah,
and I mean, he's a next year old kid from cancer.
Yeah.
In the last 2 months, but that the queens were really lamenting, or they were just thinking about themselves.
Yeah, when we lament, that means we are thinking about ourselves.
No, I mean that they will have to die with the husband. They were thinking they would have to die.
Yeah, they might have been. Oh, not everyone who does stuff, because if you go right back into the Vedic times,
yeah,
it was expected that the woman had to do that.
Mm.
But what if you didn't want to do it? It's very scary.
Yeah.
So, you know, not everyone was. Everyone probably did it because that was the culture, but not everyone had the realization to do it. So it's very scary if you don't realize.
At that time,
yeah,
the ladies were not already.
Yeah, some of them may not have had the realization.
But it was up to you at that time.
Well, maybe they didn't like their husbands. So.
Or they didn't like their husband, but I think they didn't want to die.
Very scary to jump into a fire. I couldn't do it. I couldn't just jump into a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which verse are we in?
26.
While the queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj, assuming the body of a boy. Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. Priya Vishaka, if you want to read that.
In the interim, the
he remains the fool. If a living being who has already left his body has been hurt, Yamaraja thus gives him relief, will give him another body. Since the living being in the body of the king has some attachment to the body, to his body, he walks, hovering as a ghost. And therefore Yamaraja, as a special consideration, approached the Vamantin directly to instruct them personally. Yamaraja approached them as a child, because a child is not restricted, but is granted and admitted anywhere, even to the palace of king. Besides this, the child was seeking philosophy. People are very much interested in hearing philosophy when it is spoken by child.
Very good. When she came to Australia, she could not even speak English, and now she can read English. Very good. Your guru taught you how to speak English? Acha. Good. Okay, so what are the points?
According to Vedic culture, we find it a body when a person leaves the body for the body. In the 11th day ceremony takes place, then the soul is hovering or it stays in that place. So the 11th day we call it, we offer some sesame seeds, black sesame seeds we offer in five days. Finally, the soul leaves that place and continues on.
Yeah, it's not that every soul will stay for 11 days or like that. Some souls may stay around for a period of time. Some leave immediately and go to the next destination. It's just if they are staying around, then we do these activities, these ceremonies to try to bring them. For devotees, we don't mind so much about those things. So, Yamaraj here is trying to break the attachment of the conditioned soul. So this is the position of a great soul. Yamaraj is one of the Mahajanas, one of the 12 great authorities. So the position of a great soul, of the spiritual master, and of the exalted devotees, is they try to break our attachment. Because we're very attached to this material world still. So because we are still attached to the material world, they preach to us in such a way to break our attachment from the material world. So Yamaraj, he's seeing that I need to break the attachment that they have. So a preacher is always looking for novel ways to present Krishna consciousness. So he takes the position of a child. Just like we saw in the previous canto, that Narada and Angira, then they brought the child back to life in order to present the philosophy to Chitraketan. So similarly, now Yamaraj is using a tactic to try to free the women from their attachment to the material body. So it comes in the form of a child. Very powerful. When a child gives philosophy, then it's very powerful. Because it makes us listen. And it makes us understand, well, if the child understands and I don't understand, then there must be something wrong. So then he speaks in such a way to break their attachment. So the great souls, the spiritual masters, the exalted Vaishnavas, they're always trying to break our attachment from this material world. And they speak in such a way to break our attachment. Because a sadhu means one who cuts. So the sadhu will speak in such a way as to cut our attachment to this material world. That is the mercy of the sadhu. Okay. Sri Yamaraj said, "Alas, how amazing it is. These persons who are older than me have full experience that hundreds and thousands of living entities have taken birth and died.
Thus they should understand that they are also apt to die. Yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? So Yamaraj once said this to Yudhishthira. He came in the form of a yaksha, and he disguised himself. Actually, he's Yudhishthira's father. Yamaraj came and he said to Yudhishthira, what is the most wonderful thing? And Yudhishthira, who is known as Dharmaraj, he's the son of Yamaraj, who knows the truth, then he said, the most wonderful thing is that every day everyone is dying around us, and we see death everywhere, but everyone is acting like it's not going to happen to us. That's the most amazing thing. We don't act like it's going to happen to us. We have all our plans for tomorrow. And we think some things we think are so important. Not tomorrow I have to get my hair cut. It's so important. Like that. So we have all our little plans like that. But we don't understand. Actually, we're going to die very soon. So a devotee lives in such a way that he's always planning for death. Not that we think we're going to die tomorrow. You know, I don't go to bed tonight and think, oh, tomorrow, I might die tomorrow, but I don't think like that. But still, I'm planning for death. As devotees, we're taught to plan for death. That means tomorrow I should use my energy and my time to serve Krishna. Because then we are prepared for death. It's like on the weekend, some guests, they came to the farm. We had our Sunday feast yesterday at the Hare Krishna Valley. So some guests came and they said, have you been to India? And I said, yes, I go every year. And they say, which place do you go to? And I said, Vrindavan. And they said, have you been to the Kumbh Mela? Mm. I said, it's not necessary. And they said, but it's such an important event, the biggest gathering of humanity, 60 million people go there for the Kumbh Mela. But I told them, I said, our founder, Swami Prabhupada, he also went to the Kumbh Mela in 1977. And when the devotees, because it says that if you bathe at the Triveni, at the confluence of the Ganges, the Saraswati, and the Ganga, at this auspicious time of Makara Sankranti, then you will attain liberation. So that water is sacred. So Prabhupada was 1977, Prabhupada's health was not good, so he did not go down to the river. So they brought some mota full of the water and they brought it to Prabhupada. And when they gave it to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada took the water and he poured it onto the ground. And Prabhupada said, we are already liberated. Except for the devotees, it is not essential. Of course we are there, we'll take part like that. But it is not essential. Prabhupada said, we are already liberated. So we should live our lives every day that we are acting in Krishna's service. So if we do leave our body, then we are saved. We will go back to Godhead or to wherever Krishna wants us to go to next. Like that. So a devotee, he acts in that way. He acts that I should use my energy, my time in Krishna's service. Like that. And then if I die, then okay, I'm in a safe position. Krishna will look after me. So it's a long paragraph. No, there are, long purport. There are four paragraphs. So, as we've heard in the Bhagavatam, again and again and again, this material world is actually a dream state of consciousness. Bhagavatam has already said this in the second canto. We're actually dreaming. I was explaining this in the class, the Bhagavad Gita class yesterday, when I was giving the Sunday feast lecture. Actually, the material world is a dream. We're taking it seriously, but it's not actually that serious. Okay. It's actually insignificant. Just like
When we look at the ants on the ground, do we take their lives seriously? No. So, but do you take your life seriously? Do you take your bank account seriously? No. Do you take your home and your car seriously? Do you take all these things seriously? We take all these things very seriously. But when the demigods look down at us, or Lord Brahma looks down at us, do they take our lives seriously? And we're just ants moving around like that. Nothing serious. But we take it seriously. We think, oh, it's very important. And very important. What color pillows are on my couch? Very important. I will spend days and days and days going to IKEA and Spotlight, and I'll spend all day looking for the right pillow for my couch.
After that also.
Huh?
After that also, what should be the type of my
the coffin. Yeah, I think the most expensive coffin is it costs about $30,000. It's like gold plated, and then I think Carl Williams, that criminal, he died recently, so I think they brought him that coffin. The family brought him that coffin, $30,000 coffin, just to bury the guy. Wasn't even a pious man. You know, he was a murderer and a drug dealer, and not even a pious man. This is ignorance. They think, no, he has to have a gold-plated coffin when he leaves this world.
What happens to
the
box?
They bury it.
Do they bury it?
Yeah. It's illegal to dig up the graves in our country. It's illegal. Probably in most countries it's illegal to dig up the graves.
Sometimes they
do it.
It's cheaper.
Yeah. Enough.
So the wood gets rotten.
The body's hot. Protected by the gold. You had a point?
About what you mentioned, maybe when you see that when you're going to have all the cameras, but then everything is going to happen to them. There was one of those who started working, she was talking to a priest, and the priest used to go and talk to the people before dying. And now he was a patient in the hospital, and he had to face himself with the death, but he was really confused. He didn't want to treat it, but she noticed that he was really disturbed and confused. So it's just what he said. It's very sad that people don't know what the death means and how they can help the person who is dying. They actually don't know what's good for them and how they can help.
Hmm. Yeah, it's easy to talk about it, to be fearless of death, but it's not easy to actually do it. It's like if you read His Holiness Sinjajuna Swami's diary, the diary of the Transcendental Preacher, that he wrote several volumes ago. Then he went to the doctor, and the doctor said he might have a melanoma, which means a skin cancer. So Murray said, then immediately, as soon as he heard that word, he just broke out into a cold sweat. He said for 3 days, because they had to wait for the test, the results to come back for 3 days, he said he practically couldn't sleep. He wrote a letter to the GBC saying that he was going to retire from his preaching and go to Vrindavan and become a Babaji. And he said he was so much anxiety was there. And after 3 days, then the results came back and it said the spot on the skin was benign, it wasn't cancer. Like that. So then Mara said, it's easy to speak these things, to say, oh, you know, be fearless of death, but to actually realize it's not an easy thing.
He almost died 2 times in Amazon here and there. He was really fearless for so many circumstances, but maybe that was too much.
maybe that's
he's a very special.
If he had been so many times close to death, and he was pretty good.
Yeah, he's just explaining to us. He's just showing us an example. Yeah, he's an exceptional Vaishnava. Very powerful to work. But he's teaching us that actually it's not so easy. It's easy to say it, but actually do it. Why don't you think it's greater? I think even in India you're not supposed to dig the grave up.
Muslim and Christian the same. They bury the people, but they're not allowed to dig the grave up. Because they believe when the time of judgment comes, all the bodies will rose from there. That's why God's right. They don't believe. Is that?
Yeah, that's one reason. Because
all the bodies, rotten bodies, come up.
Yeah, it's disrespectful. If someone's buried somewhere, or even if someone's ashes are kept somewhere, it's disrespectful in all cultures to touch that or to do anything like that. Okay. So we'll finish. Which verse are we up to? We just read 37, right? Okay. It is wonderful that these elderly women do not have a higher sense of life than we do. Indeed, we are most fortunate, for although we are children and have been left to struggle in material life unprotected by father and mother, and although we are very weak, we have not been vanquished or eaten by ferocious animals. Thus we have a firm belief that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given us protection even in the womb of the mother, will protect us everywhere. The boy addressed the women, O weak women, only by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never diminished, is the entire world created, maintained, and again annihilated. This is the verdict of the Vedic knowledge. This material creation, consisting of the moving and non-moving, is exactly like his plaything. Being the Supreme Lord, he is completely competent to destroy and protect. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street where everyone can see it, and yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Thus the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. If the Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector, and is in the jungle, one remains alive. Whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies, no one being able to protect him. So we should understand that Krishna will always protect the devotee. He says this in the Bhagavad Gita, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. But that does not mean he will protect our material body. He will protect our bhakti, our devotional service, and he will give us an opportunity to do devotional service again in the next life. But Krishna never promises that he will protect our material body. So when he says he will protect us, he may protect our material body, but he may also desire that our material body will not be protected. But our devotion will always be protected by Krishna. That's what he is saying. So generally, when something happens to our material body, that is because of our past karma. So the reactions are being burnt off. So it's up to Krishna whether he wants to protect us or not protect us. Just like a few years ago, I had that accident, you know, in the car crash, and then I hit my head. And so, you know, that was my karma from my previous lifetimes. I had to suffer, you know, like that. So Krishna, it's up to him if he wants to protect you or not protect you. He can stop those things from happening, or he can allow those things to happen. That's up to him. But it's our karma from our previous life. According to Krishna's desire, whether or not we get that, and then that is what we're dealing with in this material world. So we just have to continue with our devotional service, no matter what. Whether in sickness or in health, or whether
in life or in death, we just continue with our devotional service. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. I stay fixed and focused. And then Krishna will decide what is best for us. Okay.
But how could you say all this when the Yamuna Krishna was there?
No, Hiranyakashipu is telling the story. This is a story that Hiranyakashipu is telling about Yamaraj.
Oh,
right. Okay, cool.
Just like you take out another little. You have to do that slowly, away, like the wind.
Yes, Krishna is controlling everything. Okay, so tomorrow night, the class will begin at 7 o'clock. So if you are going to come for class tomorrow, make sure you're here by 7 because Maharaj will speak. So don't do what you do to me. Don't come in late. If you're going to come, be here at 7 o'clock because Maharaj will be... So we can't have people coming in and out like that. So if you are going to come, please be on time. Shilla Prabhupada ki.